What is it about going to the movies? That big screen, those rich, high-definition visuals, total immersion, total escapism, isn't it, as the lights are dimmed and someone else's story takes over our psyche for a couple of hours? It's a visual medium by definition. But there's a lot more going on too. Music, dialogue, drama, all that. But also sometimes there's another voice present that only some hear. If it's there, as you're about to hear, we'll explain. Joining me now to reveal all is Tony Saar. He's a filmmaker from Perth who's currently over in Melbourne as one of the judges for the fantastic, I have to say, the Other Film Festival. Get along if you can, if you're in Melbourne. Tony, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you, Natasha. Well,
You're also happen to be legally blind, and yet you work with such a visual medium. You're judging such a visual medium. How did you get started with it all?
Well, oddly enough, I was studying law at Murdoch University, and I really didn't like it. I just found it very dry and boring, and my partner asked me to come and sort of help her with a film that she was making. And I took a real interest in it because I ended up taking it over.
Did you?
And, I couldn't help myself. I'm like, no, move there. Okay, now do this. You know. And she just said, okay. Because she wasn't real.
How much vision did you have at that time?
I had 3% vision. Which isn't very much.
Yes, what does that mean? What do you see when you have 3% vision?
Actually, a lot more than I see now, but back then when I had 3%, I had colour vision and I had central vision, but it was very short vision. So within past a few feet, things started to blur out, and the further away something was, the less identifiable it became. But it was enough that I could still navigate quite handily. And I could see it more to the point. I could see a monitor quite well.
Well, we'll come to the logistics of filmmaking with 3% vision in a tick. Why had you lost your vision? Because this was a gradual process, wasn't it, throughout your teens?
It was. It started when I was about 16, I think. I was in high school, and I just went to take a step, and I walked into a tree, and then I went to, the next day I went to take a step down some stairs, and I completely misjudged it and went down the whole flight, and then I thought I'd better go and get something tested, and sure enough, I had a massive drop because I'd always been short-sighted, maybe half the vision of a normal person, but then it just went from that to down to this, 3%. It was a huge drop at the time.
Because you were diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa, weren't you?
Exactly. Mm. And oddly enough, the doctors knew what it was. They just didn't tell us.
Is that so? So you didn't know where you were heading?
I did not have any idea. My mother had no idea where we were going. For all I knew, I was going to have this level of vision my entire life, this 50, 60%, which was a handy amount to get around life in. But then, this happened, which was really dangerous because I could have been hit by a car,
Interesting, they didn't prepare you for that. So,
not at all.
So heading now to a film set or a location, how have you worked with such an intensely visual medium with only a small percentage of vision?
Well, oddly enough, it's very similar to the audio description process. It's simply that it's a matter of communication. The various crew people, the editors, cinematographers, sound people, it doesn't really matter who they are, I need to be able to communicate with them, and I need them to be able to describe exactly what I can't see, to augment what I can see,
So they're talking through every move, every scene, every aspect of what's in front of you.
Exactly, especially if I specifically ask for something, that's when they'll really go into high detail. Otherwise, no, unless it's something, I suppose, that they pick up that they think I really do need to know. Something is in the scene that I obviously am not seeing, they'll tell me about it. That's how it really works. It comes down to communication,
I'll say. So in that, where do you feel you have the most, and you're more judging films now, aren't you, than making them, but in the filmmaking process, where do you feel you have the most creativity?
Well, actually, yeah, it comes down to the vision, really. It's, see, I don't, Ness, it's because I don't really see it. I visualize it in my mind's eye, and I work with everybody to actually try to create that vision. And it's sometimes it's not an easy process, but it means that it's I'm just asking everybody their advice, and then giving them what. Telling them what to do from that particular point onwards. So yeah, it's a director. So it's just that I don't dictate. I work almost by committee, and then just give my final say as to know, okay, this is where we're going to go.
Well, there's a whole other filmic landscape going on in this process, and it's the filmic landscape of your mind.
Exactly, and that's exactly what it comes down to. Is that, I mean, I was very lucky in that I had vision when I was a child. So that these images and these television images, the film images, they're there, still in my head. So when I'm trying to create an image in my mind about what I want to see, the tools are still in my mind. I'm much luckier than, say, a blind person from birth who would never have the same tools to work with.
Yeah, so I mean, they're accessing a whole other kind of sensory palette, really, aren't they?
Pretty much.
Which is pretty rich in and of itself. So now you're working as a judge at the Other Film Festival, which is a brilliant film festival. And I'm wondering how you experience films yourself, to judge them but also to enjoy them.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, actually, because what makes this really possible is the advent of audio description. You know, the Other Film Festival now has every film audio described, which is really quite marvellous. And
now we need to explain what that is, because people, and we've got a little sample here which we'll play too, but can you describe what it is first? Because this is, it's kind of like an audio caption, isn't it?
Yeah, it is actually, yeah. I mean, it's a matter of describing. Somebody will describe or write a script to describe, what is on screen or what is on stage, you know, or what is, in this case, on screen, so that that will then be recorded as a separate track for the film. And so when I'm watching the film, I'm listening to somebody in my ear telling me what is happening on screen, and that then augments what's going on. I can then interact that with the soundscape and the dialogue and the music, and it actually works.
It's kind of inserted in the middle, isn't it?
It works.
Of the other audio aspects of the dialogue.
Exactly. They very cleverly or carefully work it so that it cuts between dialogue and it doesn't overlay it as much as they can possibly help that, so that it doesn't interfere with the flow of the film, which just wouldn't be a lot of fun.
You'd have to get it right. And we're going to give people to. And we'll talk about this, because it could be really, you know, if you've ever seen those when you see those dubbed shocking films that have been dubbed in another language. So let's give people a real sense of this, because if people have been catching Rake with that wonderful Richard Roxburgh on ABC One, the ABC is involved in a big trial on this at the moment with audio description, and here's a grab.
Come on, boys, we'll be late.
Darling, are you sure?
Yeah, it's fine, I can take them. I don't have my first appointment until 10:30.
Bye. Bye. I've got a million things to do around here. Bye.
She watches as the children get in the car with Barney, then looks around with a lost expression. Their Labrador dog bounds into the room. Rusty ignores her and charges off into the house. In the boardroom of Omnico.
Ladies and gentlemen of the board.
Now what? Tony, this is interesting, because there's a bit of embellishment there. Like the audio description was describing the kind of tonality of her expression.
Yes, yes.
How much detail do you want?
I want it I like it as much detail as possible, as long as it doesn't interfere with the flow of the product, because sometimes you can overdo the dialogue as to trying to really describe things in detail, where that can just, and you'll find yourself focusing on that and missing everything else. Mm. So you want, it's pretty much what she was doing. It was actually quite good, you know. You've still got a sense of what was happening.
It probably needs to be quite subtle, though, doesn't it? Because it could get quite excruciating if they're being a little bit over-descriptive over-florid, you know.
Yeah.
And she stares vacantly into space. Oh, there's a bit of dialogue in between, you know.
You've really got to be careful about how much emphasis you place upon, you know, on a word, for instance, as you said, you know, stares vacantly, you know, into things, and you've got to be careful, because it will impinge on the film, and it will draw the attention away from what's actually happening. And I mean, there is a certain amount of, you want a certain amount of interpretation. That to me is very, very important for an audio describer to interpret. And that means, you know, to guide the viewer, the listener, into what the direction it needs to go. They need to go.
But I imagine you've had some awkward experiences. I mean, what's this about seeing Shrek?
Oh, that wasn't an awkward. That was a fun experience. I was in England and we were just walking past this sort of picture theatre and it said big letters, audio described film. And I'm like, oh, okay, that sounds interesting. So we sort of had a look, and they took one look at my white stick and, you know, open arms, dragged me into this theatre. And apparently it was an opening night for this audio description technology for this particular theatre in the centre of Canterbury. Mm. And it was fantastic because it was closed caption as well as audio description. And it was a big event. So we just sort of stumbled in the middle of it. And there was a whole bunch of deaf people, and there was a whole bunch of blind people, like, with guide dogs, as well as sighted and, you know, hearing people. And then Shrek came on. And what you had was this incredible rolling effect of laughter because, well,
the closed captioning came on at a different time to the audio description.
Exactly. Well, the deaf people would see it, you know, and then the sighted people would have their go, and then the blind people would hear it, and so it would all be disjointed, but it would all, you know, so everyone would be laughing at different times, but it would just constantly get this sort of rolling wave effect. And then, of course, once people picked up on that, then that would just add to the mayhem, and it was a fun time.
But that's an exception to the rule, Tony Starr, isn't it? Because
it is.
Very few films, it seems, have this audio description. In fact, in Australia, there's no legislation in place. Unlike New Zealand and the UK, I believe, requiring audio description on Australian media. What's the impact on this for you?
Oh, it's a massive impact. I mean, I used to be a great watcher of television, and I used to enjoy going to the theatre. Now, in Perth, there, you know, one theatre has now opened, one of the Hoyts somewhere, Carousel, I think, and which is miles and miles away from me. And so that's it. I haven't been to the theatre in my own state for years. And, of course, my television viewing is near nothing, because I just, once my vision just kept diminishing, and I'm down to about 1% now, it started driving me nuts to not actually have that audio description, as I might get, say, as you say, in New Zealand or in England, where it's there's a lot more of it going on.
Is it widespread in the UK and New Zealand?
It is.
What's the comparison?
There is no comparison. I mean, there are theatres all over the place with audio description. There are museums with audio description. There are theatres just going down to your local theatre with people that will audio describe it for you. It's BBC has got audio description. It's becoming more and more a normality there to have audio description. And, I mean, it took a lot of people and a lot of work to get there, but they've been doing it for a couple of decades now to build up to that point. Well, we're here in Australia, you know, I think the Big Four have committed to something like 20% of their screenings by, you know, 2014.
This is the Big Four channels.
No, the Big TV. Four theatre.
Big theaters. Four theatres. And has that progressed? I'm wondering why we're so behind the eight ball here.
I have no idea. Maybe it's because the disability activist movement within England is very, very powerful. and they would have pushed a lot of it. But also, I don't know, they seem to be a bit ahead of the ball in anything disability. I mean, you saw that just recently with the Paralympics. You know, that doesn't just happen. That takes a lot of work to get to fill a crowd like that at the Paralympic Stadium. You know, and that comes from, you know, involvement and media. In inclusion.
So it's up to your community to get active on this issue, sir.
It is, but it's also incumbent upon our media. I mean, I just heard that, and that you know, I didn't even know. I mean, I've heard about this rake, but I didn't know that there was any audio description for it.
Well, I think that's part of a trial that ABC One have going at the moment with an audio description company, which is, I think it's been launched, started in mid-August, and it's going for the next month. So that's one to look out for, I guess, or listen out for, more to the point.
Oh, I'll listen out for it. You know, I mean, I would like to see a lot more of that on television.
Mm. This seems absolutely critical to me, and I'm grateful to you for joining us to talk about it. But also your experience as a film. It's, you know, it's interesting to hear how different people experience the visual medium.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we put a lot of store into the visual as such, and we lose sometimes a lot of the, you know, the storylines and the music and what's going on elsewhere within the construct of a film. And that's happening even in Hollywood. That's what I like about Australian cinema. There's a lot more that goes on in Australian cinema in terms of story that we haven't lost that yet.
Yeah, and working in an oral medium, man, I so agree with you. Tony Saar,
yeah.
Good luck at the other film festival. Hope it goes well this year. Thanks for joining us on Life Matters this morning.
Thank you very much.
Terrific, Tony. Tony Saar, filmmaker from Perth, currently in Melbourne, as a judge at the Other Film Festival. The Other Film Festival runs from the 19th to the 23rd of September, and we'll pop all the details on the Life Matters website. Up next, Laid Bare.